For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We got a lot to get to today. It's Jason Lloyd, 92.3 The Fan, The Athletic, and so much more across from me. What's up, buddy?
Hi.
How you doing?
I freaked you out today. Messed with you a little bit.
Which part?
I'll be there at 2:30.
Yeah, you did. You got me really good because
Nick texted me at 1:30 and said, "Hey, buddy, what time are you coming in today?" And I said, "Run a little bit late. I'll be there around 2:30.
Do you know why it's such an effective?
I was sitting in Keith's office.
Do you know why it's such an effective bit? Because for the last 5 weeks, every day it's been some different thing, and sometimes it's for like 2 hours here or 3 hours here. Like today, you're till 5.
Yeah.
And other days it's like, this is your host for 5 hours, and tomorrow it's gonna be a different one.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, you might not have known it, or maybe you did, and you're just a D. But man, you played into my anxiety every day so well. And what's funny is, I saw somebody coming around the corner out of my periphery as I'm looking down at my phone, and I see 2:30, and I just drop my head like, all right, guess I'll call him. And then you come bounding up the stairs, and I was like, you so-and-so.
Well, I gave you about a good 3 or 4 minutes and thought, I don't want to give the man a stroke. I better go down there and tell him, no, I'm actually here.
My dietary habits are already doing the work. They don't. Like, we're standing on the ledge here with, like, bad health decisions, the diabetes and heart problems. But you could have been the guy that killed me today. Like, you didn't need to add that to your byline.
Well, yeah, sorry about that. It was too easy.
I mean, it really is. And again, I kind of doing it to myself at this point. But how you doing, buddy?
Happy to be here. 3 hours. You got 3 hours. Get the best you can out of me for 3 hours.
I'm probably going to screw around for most of that time. Yeah. So, actually, it's interesting. Like, in terms of the Cavs, last night was just so much fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got home, and Ness is watching Lost, bane of my existence. She's watching this show. I have no interest in it. It doesn't strike me as a good show. But we had the debate that married folks do about, hey, do you have to watch something tonight? And I was like, yeah, the Cavs are on. And so she's like, I got 15 minutes left on this episode. So I turned the Cavs on my phone, and it was a pretty tightly contested game. And so the 15 minutes comes and goes, and by the time I get it on the TV, the final probably 4 or 5 minutes of the first half, the Cavs just run away with the game.
Yep.
And it is just, I mean, it is poetic. It is beautiful. Evan Mobley is dominating, but they have spacing. Like, I thought you only had spacing. I was told by a certain former coach, you only have spacing if everybody can shoot the three on the floor. Turns out, you can actually manifest that with, like, a system or plays or things like that. Sorry, JB Bickerstaff. That's a technical for six men on the court at once. But no, last night was so much fun, and it was honestly, like, it really was the welcome diversion from the Browns bleep show that I'd been just so, so direly needing.
Yeah. It's one game.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
No, I'm not. I'm really not. But, like, JB was right in the fact that it is hard to space the floor if you don't have three-point shooters. That is fact. And you're going to see that manifest itself when you play better teams than the Raptors. However, having said that, this is how they want to play. They want to put the ball in Evan's hands, and he was terrific. He was everything that you had wanted to see out of him in the first 3 years. And hopefully it continues, like, because this is how it's going to be. Like, they're going to keep playing this way. And they want the ball in Donovan's hands, Darius's hands, and Evan's hands. So somebody's going to have to take a step back. I think it's probably going to be Darius, because you can't take the ball out of Donovan's hands. So I think Darius, at least in terms of having the ball, probably has to take a little bit of a step back. The Cavs are okay with that. They've said for years, I've heard from them for years, that they think Darius is fine in an off-ball role. You have to sort of throw last year out. It was a terrible year for a variety of reasons. But when you put the ball in Evan's hands, good things can happen. And you saw that last night. Dribbling's not his strength. He's not going to be a dribble, pass, and shoot guy, but they don't need him to be. He doesn't have to be. I don't know what you want to bring him the ball up the floor and initiating, but he's a really, really good player. I've said for years, if they're going to win a championship, he has to be their number one. He has to be even better than Donovan. He has to be their number one. Donovan has to be their number two for them to be a legitimate championship-type contender.
Well, and I think, especially because of the prominence of players who have, like, ISO ball tendencies and we're just going to go on hero mode, I think we have this massive misunderstanding of, well, this is so-and-so's team, right? I think some of the best teams we've seen, it's like co-ownership, and it's just your turn versus my turn. And last night I thought they did a really good job of balancing like that. Like, if you want to know, like, the goal, because I think you're right, I was jamming up a little bit. It is one game.
Yeah.
But I think last night the ebb and flow of this is your time, this is my time, and being it an organic thing based off the pace of play and where things are, I think that's the goal.
So are you arguing they should be going your turn, my turn? Because I think that's a terrible idea.
No. I don't mean literally like this is your possession, my possession.
Because that's what happens a lot, especially when you have like two ball dominant guys who come together for the first time. Mm-hmm. Darius and Donovan, first time they play, like that's kind of how it goes. You know, back in the day, LeBron and Wade, that's how it goes. This one's your possession, this one's my possession. You can't play that way. You just have to play within the flow of the game. And if that means one guy gets four in a row, then one guy gets four in a row.
Yeah, I think that's more where you're at. And I do think, though, last night, it is proof of concept of everything you wanted to see. And that doesn't mean, by the way, that J.B. Bickerstaff can't coach, even though I was not happy with him at the end, and it doesn't mean that Kenny Atkinson has all the answers, but I think that's the kind of thing.
This is why they brought him here.
Yeah. Well, no, exactly. And if you can do that consistently, it does raise the ceiling of the Cavs, and when I say ceiling, I'm talking about long-term ceiling, not just in a vacuum of one season.
It was funny because last night I was I had a story I was working on, so I was in my office, and I had the two TV set up, so I had the Cavs on one TV and the Pistons on the other TV. So I had JB on the top and the Cavs on the bottom. It was just kind of funny. And of course, the Pistons are coming here Friday night. They had a bad loss. They were up on the Pacers and lost last night. I think JB would be fine in Detroit. He is what he is, and I think he's a really good coach. I think he did a lot of good things here. And now you're hoping that Kenny can get more out of the offensive end without taking too big of a step back on the defensive end. The defense is going to slip a little bit. It's just how it is. But that's okay, because I said throughout the postseason, if you have an elite defense but you can't score, that's not a formula for success in the playoffs. If you can score, you don't have to be you don't have to be the best defensive team. You just can't be the worst. Somewhere in the middle is fine. Well, it's fine if you can score. And that's where the Cavs had so much trouble in the playoffs before getting good looks and getting and they did have a lot of open looks that they just missed too. Like, guys just miss shots, and that happens sometimes. But you want the thing, though, I defended JB a lot when he was here, but the one thing that I acknowledged was really frustrating was it just felt like they were so pick and roll heavy on offense. There was really nothing else in the bag to go to. Anytime it was late and close, it was give it to Donovan and get out of his way. And it just felt like during the regular season, there were missed opportunities of things that you could work on besides just give it to Donovan and let him go win it for you. And that, and what we saw last, give Evan the first touch of the game. I've been screaming that for years. Every time down the floor, Evan Mobley should have the first touch of the game. Does that solve everything? No, of course not. But it gets him going early. It gets him involved early. It gets him activated early. Darius and Donovan can get theirs anytime. Get the big guy going early. They used to do it when Kevin Love was here. And you tell Evan, where are you most comfortable on the floor? Go there. Is it at the nail? Is it at the elbow? Where do you want the ball? Because you're getting the first touch every time down. We don't care if the other team knows it. It doesn't matter. It's fine if they know it. We want to get you activated and get you going.
Well, and I think the Evan conversation that gets real tedious was, one, putting on the, well, it's year three and that's when you make the jump. Because everybody makes the jump in year three. Not entirely. And bigs are a little different. Like, bigs do tend to develop at a slower clip. I just think, well, like, even last night, like, he's not going to look like that every night.
No, of course
and
not.
And that's okay. The point is, if he looks like that offensively 10% of the time last year, can you get it to 35% of the time this year?
You can get higher than that.
Like, how much?
Over 50.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think if you say you can get that guy more than half the games this season, not only do I think you're going to blow past 48.5 wins, which I think is the current over-under at FanDuel, I think it changes, because I do think good habits beget good play and good habits, And I think those things come out in the postseason more than anything. And I think you saw bad habits beget bad habits under JB, whether that's his fault or a flawed roster.
Yeah, I mean, the regular season's for building things to use in the postseason. That should be the point of the regular season. And forcing yourself to play left-handed sometimes, doing things you're not used to doing, not used to accustomed, just try something different. You know, they were so pick-and-roll heavy. Let's throw in a couple dribble handoffs and just to give them a different look, because teams can take away pick-and-roll so easily in the postseason. It's you just blitz the ball handler, get the ball out of his hands. Okay, now what do you have? And you know, I think a lot of young coaches sort of go through that process first time through of figuring that out and then having to then diversify. I'll be curious to see JB in Detroit and see what he does. That's a much different situation. It's a really young team. They're not very good. There's a lot of growing and building to do, but what lessons he'll take from Cleveland, just like Kenny. I think Kenny learned a lot in Brooklyn and how to deal with stars and then going to Golden State and soaking in the Warriors culture. And now I'm curious to see him second time around as a head coach and see how he's changed.
The one thing we haven't mentioned was the rotations last night, because that was probably my biggest frustration with JB, is he got really sticky with rotations. Again, it's one game, but you know, we saw a genuine Ty Jerome sighting. Well,
he was hurt. I mean, he had the most severe injury in the history of ankles last year. He didn't play a single game, which was odd. The whole thing around him was odd, but especially early on in the year, you're going to play more guys.
I like that. I like that a lot.
I don't know. Kenny's talked about playing like 11 guys. I don't know how you can play that many.
Memphis does it. I'm not trying to be that guy, but because that's the one team that does it.
Yeah, I mean, you can always find an anomaly. I don't know that it's good to play that many guys, but we're so early. You don't have to have that conversation right now. You just sort of let that thing take care of itself. There's always going to be an injury. We've already seen one with Strus. There's always going to be an injury or a bench guy who's not playing well or something who maybe needs to sit down and catch his breath a little bit. But they've got, like, they're a deep team. They've got options. And that's, you know, we can talk about it more as we go, but you know, I'm really interested in the new world NBA with the way that they've restructured sort of the cap with the tiers in the salary and the punishments that come with it. And if you're the Phoenix Suns and you have a flawed roster with a really high payroll, it's really hard for you to get better. And that's why I think you saw the Cavs make the moves that they did in the offseason and locking up all these guys long term. Because when they become a tax team, I'm not saying they don't have any holes, but I'm saying they have a deep and balanced roster, which is what you need when you start entering some of the penalty areas where they may eventually go. Does that make sense? Because yep. It gets, you better be whole when you get there, because if you get there and then you start looking for parts, you're going to have problems.
We got a lot to get to, guys, but we, of course, are talking about Evan Mobley's big night. Kenny Atkinson did have something to say about Evan as the leading scorer. We got Pete Futek coming up at 3:40, though. Another big weekend in college football. Ohio State, Iowa. Can Ohio State get back on the winning side of things? Brad Doherty, Cavs TV analyst for FanDuel Sports Network, coming up at 5:20. But as we get started, How much are you putting into one game from Evan Mobley, that and Kenny Atkinson, on what impressed him most about Evan Mobley? That's next on 92.3 The Fan. I've said this about the Cavs, Jason, that where we are with the Cavs, because the Browns are what the Browns are, because in fairness with the Guardians, like, that was a really fun season, but it's over now and we'll see what they do next year. I think Cleveland fans just needed, I compared it to like a low commitment, just a fun rebound of a, let's just have some fun, play some good basketball.
Good first date.
And don't stress me the hell out.
Just a nice first date.
Yeah, no, we weren't even
dating. Go to the carnival. Go to the carnival, have some cotton candy.
No, this is a 3 a.m. you up text. That's what the Cavs are right
now.
The Cavs are just good booty. That's what the Cavs are right now. Just commitment free. Let's just enjoy good basketball. I'll worry about getting married. The playoffs coming up in like 4 months, 5 months, 6 months. Math is hard for me. That's where we are. Just let me get out of this toxic relationship I have with the 2024 Browns.
So when do you go to the carnival and eat cotton candy?
I mean,
January.
Whenever December. They say we got to go to the carnival or I'm not going to come over again. Whenever they force the issue. Right.
We have to do something outside the house.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I'm starting to doubt myself as a human being and my value. Okay, I'll take you to the freaking carnival. All right? But one cotton candy. No candy apples.
One Ferris wheel.
And you know what? I'll hold your hand for 5 minutes. But then we're back to the house.
One teddy bear game.
Yep. And if you don't get the teddy bear, we're not going. No, it's okay. We'll go to the store on the way home and I'll buy you a teddy bear instead of throwing another $10 at Carney's. But no, that's where I kind of feel like the Cavs are. I think the Cavs walk into the season at the perfect spot, and last night's game was the perfect perfect example of that. Words are hard because of how you won. It was fast. There was great pacing, great spacing. Now I'm just rhyming. And, you know, Evan leading the way. I think those are the kind of things that now you can sit back, and even if you come out against, Detroit on Friday, and there's a clunker, we had the Toronto game, and this is really, like, I'm not wake me up in April. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is wake me up in January. Like, I'm giving them full breath to figure it out and understanding that now that I see a coach that can maybe have tighter restrictions on whether it's rotations or proof of concept on the offense or proof of concept on Evan being dominant, now I can kind of woosah and just chill until, you know, things start to tighten up around January or February.
Yeah, you can't live and die with every game. That's not how the NBA is built. That's not a smart way to go about it. They're going to win games that might surprise you, and they're going to lose games that you look around and say, how did they lose?
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
So that team, that's just the nature of how it goes. It's the process. Are you getting better? Are you figuring things out? Are you understanding what guys can do? And last night was a great start. It was a great start. And hope to see more of it. Hope they continue to play this way. And the thing that I like, I told you before the show, they are not running from the Evan component. They are putting pressure on him. They're telling him, we need more from you. We expect more from you. And I think that's a really good thing. Like, he's in year four. It's okay. It's okay to raise expectations on him. And from the day Kenny arrived, they have not hid from the fact that this is how they're going to play. They're going to focus him. They're going to feature him on offense. They know he can do more, and they expect him to deliver. And I think that's great because, you know, I understood what JB was saying, and I agreed with it a lot, that when you bring in a young player of his caliber, a lot of times it's on a really bad team. Mm-hmm. I've said this 100 times before. It's a bad team, and all you're doing is worrying about developing that guy. And you give him all the touches he wants and all the looks he wants because you want him to be really good. The Cavs were a unique situation where probably their best piece came last. And so now then you trade for Donovan. So once you trade for Donovan, you're only trying to win games. That's it. You're just trying to win basketball games. And the progression and the growth has to take a back seat to that. I thought they could have done more with him, But I understand not making him the focal point because you've got bigger fish to fry. And now you got Donovan on a long-term contract. You got everybody on a long-term contract. This is a good team. They could be number. I don't think they're better than three in the East as of right now. But the East is far different than the East was before. It's much more deep and balanced. Boston's really, really good. But there's no team out there that you look at and say the Cavs cannot beat that team. There's just a lot of teams that can also beat them. Mm-hmm. It's just the way of the NBA now. This is the new parity world that has never really existed before. So now you can sort of take this regular season to bring Evan along because you always had the pressure of Donovan. You got to re-sign Donovan. Well, you did that, and he's here. So now you can sort of reverse engineer this a little bit and now go back to Evan and get Evan brought up to speed to where he should have been probably 2 years ago. Does that make sense?
It does, and I think it's why – so there's I really loathe the conversation around coaches and managers now where we've gone from they're solely responsible for winning and losing, and you fire them if the second you get the sense. Like, that's where we were 30 years ago in almost every sport, and now it is, well, they're just a cog in the machine, and how much does it really matter, especially in the NBA. But there is coaching, which I think eases the relationship between Donovan and development, mm-hmm. and then there's coaching style, which I think is maybe what you're pointing to. And that doesn't mean that JB, again, isn't a good coach. That you don't do what he did with this team, take them from where they were, I mean, in the ashes of LeBron's second run, to being a team that is capable of going to the second round of the playoffs.
In the ashes of the John Beilein embarrassment, yes. of running off the job halfway through his first year here. That was embarrassing. Yeah. They were in a bad spot.
Well, and that could have set them back like 3 years if you go to the wrong coach at that moment.
And he and JB lifted them out of the darkness and did a lot of really, really good things that I hope fans can appreciate. Maybe you need more time to pass. Maybe 5 years from now you can look back on it and see it might still be too close to realize kind of what it was when he walked in and when he took over to where it was when he left. He did a lot of really, really good things here. He's not the perfect coach. He's not the best coach in the NBA. But he served a really good purpose for where they were at and where they needed him to take them, and he did it very well.
Well, and I actually agree, despite being one of the foremost get this guy out of here in town,
yeah.
because I do think like it's not an impossible position. Every team, every coach in the NBA would say, hey, we're in the play-in. Now we're going to add Donovan Mitchell. Yes, that's a problem you want to have.
Right.
But it does come with its own complexities. And it did ask of something of JB that he had not been asked to do. And trying to balance those two things. So this is less, ah, bleep JB, and it's more, okay, fresh voice, saying a message in maybe a different way. And I think that's where, again, yesterday, and I agree with you, and I'm glad you pointed it out, even though I jammed you up about it. It is one game, but it is proof of concept. And yeah. now we come back with Evan and go, how many times can we get that? Because Donovan can't do it all. You know, like no. and it's tough for a superstar. When I think there were points, and maybe you can speak to this or shoot it down. I think there were points last year where Donovan's trying to be a little bit of everything for everyone, setting the tone in the locker room with the way he was talking about that didn't necessarily jive, by the way, with what JB was saying. And you know, trying to encourage Darius and Evan to kind of get theirs and be more authoritative. And that's not what I want. Like, I want Donovan to be a leader. I want him to help push whatever the coach wants and you know, funnel that message. I don't want him to have to drive that message. And I think that's what puts, I think finally maybe Donovan can just be like the best player on a basketball team again.
Well, Donovan is an undersized guard. He's not big.
Wait, what?
He's not... He's not LeBron. He's not Giannis. He's not Jokic. He's a little guard. It's hard to win when your best player is a little guard. And people can get upset at that. They can get mad at that. That's the reality. History has indicated. Yes, you can throw Steph Curry up there. Okay, fine. He was the greatest shooter in the history of the world, surrounded by some of the greatest talent ever assembled on one team. You can throw Isaiah Thomas out there. Again, it's an anomaly. More times than not, it's very difficult to win a championship when you have a small guy. And Donovan wore down. He had the knee throughout the second half of the season. He was not in shape. He told you he wasn't in shape in the playoffs. He was not in very good shape. And then he had the calf on top of that. And he played a career high in minutes under JB, but it wasn't like he was leading the league in minutes. It was just a career high for him. But again, he's not built like some of these other superstars in the NBA. So that matters. And that's why I go back and say that you need Evan to be the number one. I totally believe you. If you could be the Cavs have proven you could be a really good team with Donovan as the number one player, as the number one option. Darius is the number two option. You can be a really good team. But I believe there is a ceiling to how far you can go when you are driven by an undersized backcourt. When that is what is propelling you, you are not going to get to a championship level. You need something else. You need a playmaking wing. This league is driven on playmaking dominant wings. They haven't had one since 23 left, and they're trying to do it sort of a different way. But that's why Evan's development is so important to this, because you can be a playoff team. They've proven you can go to the playoffs. You can win series in the playoffs. I'd argue you can even win two series if the matchups fall right. But you will not win the Eastern Conference Finals, and you will not win an NBA championship if Darius and Donovan are what you are relying on to get you there. You need something bigger, something with more size, something that can handle more of the grind of the NBA. How many times have we seen Darius go down? How many times have we seen Donovan with nagging injuries that have impacted him? Size, size matters in the NBA, and you need stars.
Thank God you said in the NBA.
But you need stars. That's why it's such a wing driven league. It's some of the bigger guys that lead these teams to titles. Look at Tatum and Brown.
It's also so weird because I think the Cavs were beset by perceptional issues too. The NBA is the idea of dealing and kind of helping somebody fix their rough edges. I think there was a perception, and again, this is something you can speak to or not, that the Cavs were in a situation where at some point they were going to have to break up Donovan and Darius. I still think that will be the reality. But Evan playing really well allows you to change the perception on the Cavs because it doesn't put them in a position of desperation if Evan and Donovan are on the same level, even if Donovan's still the 1A versus the 1B.
Yeah. I actually, if something has to get broken up, I actually think it's the front court more than the back court.
Ooh, I like that. I think that's really interesting.
Because I think Donovan, no one was talking about the fit between Donovan and Darius 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
No, yep. It was only last year. Yep. And it was last year because Darius was having an awful season. And he was having an awful season for a lot of different factors. But I think Donovan, Darius, now, outside forces may force them to break that up. And we wrote about that in May. And that's still hovering. Like, they didn't trade Darius, but that whole thing is still hovering, lurking in the distance. Let's put it that way. But in terms of on-court fit, I'm still more concerned with Jarrett and Evan in the front court than I am Darius and Donovan in the back court. And we'll see. Now, if Evan starts shooting 36% from three and taking five or six threes a game, all right, maybe some of those fit issues go away. But we haven't seen that. That's still another piece that's yet to come from all of this, is he has to shoot. I think, what did he take last night? I think he took two.
Mm-hmm.
He has to take more than two. I might be wrong on that. Double check me. I think he took 2 3-pointers last night. And it's only the first game. It's fine. It's totally fine. But as we progress and as this goes, that number needs to get higher.
So I agree that Evan shooting threes can alleviate some of that. I still think Evan shooting those threes as the five makes them the most dangerous.
I said it last year, whenever I would talk to teams around the league about the Cavs, nobody ever talked about Jarrett. Yeah. It was always Evan surrounded by four shooters. That's how everyone saw the future of the Cavs playing out. Evan at the five, four shooters around him. And then it takes a lot of the pressure off him having to develop that three-point shot if he's at the five.
216-474-0092 at Nick Wilson says at by Jason Lloyd. Social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Bruce in Strongsville, you stick there. How does last night's Evan Mobley change the Cavs ceiling? And dad to dad, Nick to Jason, next on 92.3 The Fan. I host Sons of the Shoe, which is a great podcast, by the way. You should check that out. Spencer Sherman and I break down everything around the Buckeyes on the Sons of the Shoe podcast. Odyssey app, 92.3thefan.com. Wherever you get your podcasts, follow Sons of the Shoe today. But no, they're not playing Iowa. That was a dynamic drop-in from me. It's Nebraska. There we go. But we are talking, we've been talking about the Cavs, obviously, start the show here. And we're talking about how Evan Mobley raises the ceiling here. Bruce in Strongsville's been waiting. Bruce, welcome to the show, buddy.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Just one comment first on the Browns. Jimmy and Dee need to take their plans for their stadium in Brook Park and Cleveland, roll them up, throw them in the fireplace, and burn them and sell that abysmally inept organization in North Korea. And then that'll take care of the Browns. But it was really nice to see the Cavs last night use different lineups. And to be a little argumentative, we don't need Evan Mobley to become proficient or 36% from 3-point. Where we need him is to become proficient from 15 to 20-foot jumpers to open up the middle that's been clogged up by, it looks like Anderson Varejão and Tristan Thompson in the old days, where you've just got two large guys standing around in the middle who are only effective from 3 to 5 feet away from the basket. But it was really nice to see the new guys that he threw in there, Sam Merrill, everyone playing effective minutes early in the game. I know it was the Raptors, but it was really nice to see that change. That's all I have to say.
Bruce, real quick, I don't think Kim Jong-un is going to fix the Browns.
Wouldn't you? How about South Korea? Why do you got some in North Korea?
Yeah.
What's wrong with South Korea?
Why?
Okay, Syria. Syria. Okay. Get out of Cleveland.
All right, Bruce, we appreciate you, buddy. All right. I didn't think we could double down after North Korea, but we went right to Syria.
By God, he found a way.
And we did it. That's as I say often when I screw up in parenting, that's on me, dog. The mid-range game just doesn't do anything for anyone anymore in the NBA.
15 feet might as well be 3 feet. You're still going to clog a paint.
Yeah.
I mean,
it really is. It's a pretty simple game. Like, that's
why he's passionate. I don't want to burst his bubble.
Well, but that's why, like, even the biggest Karras detractors are, he insists on shooting the mid-range, and that has no value. And I'm like, he's still a good basketball player.
My issue with Karras isn't mid-range. It's one night it's 50 and one night it's 5. You never know what you're going to get from him.
So if that was your third best player, I'd probably be more concerned with it. When it's like your sixth best player, I'm like,
oh, I agree.
Give me that.
I mean, they're a good team. They are a talented, deep basketball team.
So we're going to get to the North Korea Browns here in about 15 minutes there, Jason. But at the end of yesterday's show, I've been sitting on talking about this for a minute. Little man, a 13-year-old kid, my oldest daughter's 14, came over while I was home this weekend and asked for my daughter's number, and I'm incensed.
So he asked you?
Nope. While I was there, a grown-ass man.
Like hovering outside listening to the conversation or just in the residence?
That's the other thing. My back was turned. I was in the residence washing pumpkin guts off my hands because we had carved pumpkins. And my wife flagged me down as I was getting ready to go outside, and she's like, I don't remember the kid's name. He was just over, and he walked right up to Olivia and asked for her phone number. And I was like, I've got to be honest. I went kind of full gorilla. It says a lot about me. I'm a pretty evolved man, but yeah.
Did you throw your poop at him?
Well, not yet, although that is on the table. No, so I walked out to the garage, and we have a landing that's about a foot and a half off the garage floor.
Yeah.
And we have two steps that lead down to it, and we locked eyes as men.
Yeah.
We locked eyes.
He's not a man. He's a 13-year-old boy.
Okay, that's, you know what? I disagree. You asked for my daughter's number. You are a man. You are acting like a man. I will treat you like a man. And so I just, instead of taking the steps, I just dropped and just, I mean, just all solid of me and just kind of popped up a little. The Dwayne Rock Johnson in the ring kind of just popping up. I saw the whites of his eyes. Yeah. But I just think, like, think about it. When you and I were younger, and you're older than I am, but when you and I were younger.
Oh, here we go.
No, that was one cheap shot.
Nick found out how much older I am.
That's a skosh, just a small bit there. When's the retirement party? But so in my day, and I'm saying that now because I can, because I'm middle-aged now, you never asked for the number. You never asked for a date when dad was there. Am I wrong on this? You always went around the dad. It was called fear or respect.
I was scared of dads when I was in middle school. Yeah, for sure. So did he get the number or not?
Yeah, he got the number.
He got the number?
Yeah.
So all that was for nothing.
Yeah. You know why?
All that posturing was for nothing.
So I don't... Okay. This is tough. I don't think my daughter knew the context.
Yeah.
Because my daughter's pretty unassuming and she's kind of in her own little world. And I don't think she understood it because the second that mom kind of was like needling her a little bit, she was like, well, I guess I got to delete that number now, which is the right answer. Again, fear. She shows fear that her father's going to react like a gorilla.
Is this the first boy interest?
Yeah.
Well, first one?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, there's been like at school.
Yeah.
But that's not real. Like when you're like 10 years old.
So the first one at the house, one that came to the house.
Yeah, the first one that's a real threat.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotta be careful how much I say. My daughter is 12, and last year I think was the first time that she showed interest in a boy, and the blood left my head.
Yeah.
And my middle guy. This 14, he actually had like a very serious relationship for over a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's different. That's
and
a boy.
And he was at her house and she was at our house and they would watch. Like it was a full on for like over a year.
Yeah.
And yeah, I felt the same way. He's a boy.
Yeah.
And then my daughter said she liked a boy and I couldn't see color.
Mm-hmm.
I lost all sense of taste.
Yeah.
I had no blood in my head and I just didn't. I told my son's girlfriend's dad, I'm like, buddy, I am so sorry. I know how you feel now because I don't know how you're handling all of this because I told him like, you know, my daughter said that there was this boy interest and it didn't last very long and you know, we're good. Everything's back to normal. But yeah, it's first time to go through it with a girl. Woo!
So here's the thing.
A little different than going through it with a boy.
My oldest one is very sheltered. The twins, I'm in trouble. They're both boy crazy.
Yeah.
So I know I'm in so much, you know what, with that.
Yeah.
So I thought I was safe for a little bit longer. And here's the thing. It's when the call is coming from within the neighborhood, so much worse. If that kid lived across town, like you got to go through a lot of bad traffic. You're not driving that far to see you're not riding a bike that far to see my daughter.
Right.
This kid lives a block over. All right. The threat is real. The threat is in the neighborhood.
Do you have the cameras? It's time to invest in Ring cameras.
It's a rental. I thought I was going to be safe here because we're looking for the house to move into here in a short bit.
Yeah.
So I like it's changing my thinking even on, well, I'm going to buy a house in this neighborhood.
Now you're moving cities.
You know what? We're now too close to family. We moved to Wadsworth to be closer to family. Now we need
now
to
now you're
move.
Going to Sandusky.
Yeah, now. Actually, now we're also moving to North Korea with the Cleveland Browns. 216-474-0092. Real quick here. Jack, we got about 30 seconds, buddy. What you got for us?
Nick, watch the movie Den of Thieves and the part where 50 Cent's daughter has a date, like a prom date with a boy, and he comes home or comes to the house to pick her up, and then 50 Cent introduces him to his friends in the garage. I think you'd really enjoy that part.
All right. That's it. I'm going to go ahead and do that in the break. Jack, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you very much.
Yep.
I mean, now it is just full-scale intimidation. Now it is. Because now it's like, listen, you want to date my daughter, that's fine. But you will treat her as if she is the only human being on the planet because I got 20 to 30 years. I got time to serve, okay? And I will do it with a smile on my face. When we come back, the Browns really do have a chance to do the funniest thing on Sunday. That's next on 92.3 The Fan.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.